Okay, my name is Laura Maria. Speaking of short poems, I'm dedicating this to a very, very dear friend of mine. Her name is Brenda Joy Dobson. She's a poet that died earlier this month and a very dear friend of mine. And I'm just writing or reading a haiku poem that I wrote for her. And it, Brenda, my joy, better is the earth, sunshine in your sons, angel halo in your crown. Okay, I'm going to be... last week I read her one poem, Mama's Life Symphony. She had 69 poems published on authorsden.com, and I'm just going to relatively quickly read two moderate-sized poems, hopefully within the next 2 minutes. This one's, they're both related to the poem I read last week and dealing with people passing. Because when I heard the news from her son one Wednesday evening, I cried all the way home, literally. And I cried going to sleep and cried waking up the next morning. That's how much he meant to me. If she was alive, she'd be here tonight. Symbolic love. Two lives shaped long before the poem Love Without Touching was penned. From the first fiery kiss in winter to the last on an autumn cool night. Little things forgot, forged in time yet, moving too fast. Moonlit walks, sweet little talks, midnight bowling, impromptu picnics in the park, skipping up rocks across the River Mon, watching the moon rising, full of itself, riding the way along river's edge. Once he met her at the train with a single long-stemmed rose, a symbolic gesture of requited love. Some green-eyed gossip said, for those undefined May-December lovers, so amorphously different, one from another, like the moon play wrestling with the rising sun on a defined day. Once he stretched their names on the front mail of an old covered bridge, marking their love in time forever, before he transitioned away, leaving her to mourn alone until his earthly visit one night. She woke to pen this bitter, sweet encounter in the poem, Love Without Touching. Afterwards, he once again took flight as her heart and pieces of her soul joined his. That's the end of the first poem. And the second and last poem, Love Without Touching. Here it is on Pandora Radio, our song, Enigma's Sadness, ripping through my spirit, penetrating my soul, recapturing the us, well, the way it was, all the little things rushing back, cause we were so muddy together until death separated us. Immobilizing sameness of fog-like days and me just getting by, drowning in empty. Drawn to the calendar, I see the date. Well now, it's your birthday. Is this gift coming through? Cause it's working. I see your face in the softness of the candle glow. Your voice comforts me. And nobody ever smiles your smile. And no song, though hauntingly said, could ever love me this much without touching. See, I miss you. Semper Fi. That's by Brenda Joy Dobson.
Thanks, Laura. Thank you, Laura, thank you. Oh, boy. David Villavardi.
Hello. Thanks, everyone here, for sticking around, the hardcore fans. Until recently, my only claim to fame as a writer was being rejected by the New Yinzer for a piece about furries. But I recently got published in the Loyal Hannah Review, which doesn't seem to be doing that well, which is probably why they accepted this. Like Lorne Marie, this is a piece about a friend who has departed. Whose name was Hillary. It's called Adirondacks. We can leave any time we want, which spoke nothing of our debts, the obligations to everyone and everything but ourselves. The city is killing us. I nodded blankly in affirmation, as if another response could possibly exist. We split shifts, leaving our bodies for the glamour of animal husbandry as the walls closed in and commerce reared its ugly head in the nameless streets outside. Birdsong and sunbeam married in the breath of country air as the ground swelled before us in testament to the absolutions we denied. Then back from runnel and warbler to rooms that feel lived in, the child who lived beneath the floorboards and all the ghosts we laid to rest. There was the great ugliness underpinning it all, the hideous tones of our centerpiece, the crying divide between us, and the boilerplate lies crawling out of the woodwork of 100 bygone yesterdays. There were the thoughts best left unsaid, the rank and file emotions, the driftwood apologies, serpentine and winding, coursing over the lip of the raquette into the hangdog afternoons of our hyphenated lives. There were the things that never changed, the Ansel Adams in your mother's bathroom, the countless lists that draped the fridge, the sawgrass just below our fingertips, and your smile careening through the mad whorls of windblown hair in the onslaught of autumn grace. There were the last things, too. The lies littered in conversation, the anger that punctuated our sentences, the shadows cast on the discarded curtain underneath the sofa. There we were, with the armoire in various states of disrepair and the cabinets unhinged. There we were, complicit and negligent in the part and parcel acrimony of armistice, life bleeding through the joys of living as morning light crests over haystack and warmth stings our skin. Thank you very much.
Heads up, Penny, too. Wow, okay, cool beans. Carla Lang. Where are you at, Carla? I know you're somewhere.
All right, so a couple new ones. Advice for the unhinged. This summer, you'll want to shoot up the entire city. Your gold-leafed skin will burn and say yes to your flabby arms, and your wallet, yes, to more narcotics and top-shelf flickers. And every red freckle on the blunt hips of an ex who said you were too much mania to absorb will say abso-fucking-lutely yes this time too. And then you'll need a bigger studio to sashay in, in a full-length mirror to reflect your glory. You'll no longer tiptoe on the purple tongues of holy ghosts, artist will surrender to your magnetism, vying for your exuberance. You'll meet clairvoyant critics and renegade politicos. But I know you. Because soon you'll crave anonymous company and disbelievers. You'll gather your things, jump ship, collect what remains, steep in your shortcomings, regress to rural exile, fake the tragic death you always envisioned, invest in banalities, pretend you don't miss me, pretend never again never happened. You'll come home, the calluses on your hands will adapt into something softer. You'll call your mom and sew up old jeans, and you'll never buy that semi-automatic, even if you don't trust a living soul and you're under government surveillance. Someday you won't need to extract oblivion from the bottom of a well. Call this coping, but save a little sweet vermouth in your gut to elude any bad blood. Okay, cool. One more. It's called Instructions for Insomnia. And I hope I'm not the only insomniac. So it's best not to stare at the spiders that hang in corners from vents directly above you. Best not to ruminate on the myriad of arachnids your body has ghosted in your throat. You can't blame yourself for everyone's dejection. Repeat this until the sudden whim of absolution frees you from the detours in these months of long shadows and hot rain. Don't try to imagine the room that looks like him, a disorder of hard covers arranged by genre. Don't envy his loud inhales, his descent into absolute stasis. You're the one with the fear of silence. You don't have to decipher your mind's restless premonitions or even pay the gas bill tomorrow. Just try to add up the sum of your ruins. The recession won't mind if you re-up on illicit downers this week. Smoke and feel unscathed. Don't let this habitual tiptoeing betray the fire in your belly. Close your eyes to a vision. Expect omens to appear. Like, let the mattress sigh and suck you in like a final welding into the night. Thank you.
If some of you folks have read, you might want to give me your email, okay? Anybody who's read, I'd just like to have it.
Your name? Anybody that's on this list that wants to give her a name, I would strongly recommend it because she outranks me on that. Yeah, do it, because we want to get you guys scheduled for next year. Little Irish girl, you too, huh? You got her name. Your dad was a cop, man. You know, you just laid that on me, man. I love that. All right, Ken Engler. Come on, Kenny, Ken, where you at? I know you're here. Oh, there you go. You got
it. He doesn't have the stand today. Okay. All right. Every time I get up in front of a microphone, I always think about the stand-up, first stand-up that Larry David was going to do. And he says he just came up in front of the mic, looked around the audience, was like, I don't think so. And he walked away. So, but this poem, if you can call it that, is called The Moon is Made of Cheese. Okay. In a bar bathroom, a man finds out that an unflushing toilet is an unflushing toilet. His osseous hands splash an iron broth onto his sweaty, sunburnt face. He stares hard into the mirror. He is not the man he once was. He has the eyes of a mannequin. No, literally, he stole his eyes from a mannequin at JCPenney's, and his ears are from one of those CPR dummies that he met during a Red Cross certification course. He notices pictures of paradise and beautiful women scotch-taped to the walls, foreign things. He hears a muffled sound coming from outside the bathroom window. It sounds like somebody crying and eating, but he sees no one. "I must be drunk," he says. Last call rains, and the bartender begins counting the skein of wet $1 bills in her tip jar. She lets loose her chignon and downpours black rivulets, decauterizing the morass of love's past. His reign of yesteryear shatters the caryatid bottle and the entablature that supports him. He closes the door to begin another walk without any stars. He notices that there aren't any stars. Again, he hears that muffled sobbing and chewing. It begins to worry him. He questions if his senses are deceiving him. "Oh, the humanity," he cries out. So, naturally, he detaches his ears to see if they're not malfunctioning. Poking out wax with his studio apartment key, they pass his inspection. "Well, maybe it's my eyes." He smacks himself a good whack on the back of the head. He knocks his eyeballs out, bouncing onto the pavement. Dropping to his hands and knees, he crawls hand over hand, groping the sidewalk for his mannequin eyeballs. Picking one up, he rubs it against his striped sweater, polishing it like an apple, and pops it back into its socket. The man picks up the other eyeball and holds it in front of the other. "They seem fine to me," he says. The man sighs and looks up to see the stars, but there aren't any stars out tonight. There's a blue moon. The smoky blue light of the full moon blinds the night, and the moon has trolled a hole through one cheek and is now working on her lower lip and crying in between bites. The man suddenly realizes her loneliness. Their perpiatic satellite, once part of the demiurge that is the Earth, she was let go but can never leave the Earth behind. A pale and barren crater face. Her only visitors stuck a flagpole in her, scarring her, marking her, a notch in their belts. And then they left behind what they didn't need for their journey home. The moon, having perhaps the most severe case of eating disorders, binges on herself for 15 days and then begins to purge for another 15. With each chew, the man can see scars stretching along her smile, not unlike the yolk tree roots coming above the ground like scars on Mother Earth's face.
Walk out the door. In front of you, wet pavement, a passing car, pale pink-yellow light scattered by the floating mist left over from a passing rain shower. Behind you, a young woman, still finishing her drink, interested but unwilling, and a weary barmaid, thankful for a generous tip. Behind you, a band packing up, a manager that's ready to close for the evening and send the patrons out into the sodium vapor night. Thank you.
Paul Paycheck, come on up here. I see you hide. Back on up here. All right, my man.
Thanks.
Manage, thanks. Dirty River Penny. Thinking of bad booze and hangovers. My toes have started to go numb. Of denting Ryan's fridge with my head after Cordell Stewart threw his second interception in the 1997 AFC Championship game. Pots and pans crash to the floor. Lori says Iron City tastes like you're sucking on a corroded penny, and it's still true even though the river water is different. I was so naive, I giggled driving three bags of 40-ouncers to Ryan, who lived in an apartment in a former bar at the bottom of Woodmont Street in East McKeesport. He gagged at the sight of them and laughed, chugging what must have felt like an 8-yard run up the middle, his breakfast. He already had Heinz Ward's eyes, even though he wasn't around yet. Ryan's a guy who now lives in upstate New York and randomly declares his love of Christ on the internet. I'm so corrupt, this makes me gag and choke. We toasted his marriage with strawberry soda called Cheers. But this was then and not now, when Bill Romanowski got into Stewart's face after he threw a 3-yard interception in the end zone, smacking his own head over and over, yelling, "Dumb! Dumb! Dumb!" And that's what got me charging the fridge. A blind, poached, fat pig prodded by nothing. And when I hit, I saw birdies and stumbled backwards as Ryan's old man asked me what the fuck was wrong. And that was the last time I had Iron Cities until a few weeks ago. Pete brought over a 6-pack of Iron City Pounders. When I got there, I opened the green mini fridge and the round red logo made me flinch as if I spotted a suicide robin dive bombing me out of the corner of my eye. Surprises like this shouldn't happen. Free beer that's not so free. We drink everything, outlasting everyone as usual, saving the Iron Cities for last. Upon first sip, I quote Lori about the rusty pennies, but own it like it's mine. Someone say that's bad, but not as bad as Iron City beer. I rub my head, looking for a knot that's been gone for almost 20 years. John Elway won that night, and so did that human pincushion, Romanowski, and I ended up on my mother's couch, head clanging with 300 years of impurities and sludge I've made all by myself. I drink and think I've promised myself so many things, and here I am with only the basics because of so many broken promises. The next day, I tell Scott those irons ripped my old one into a new one. We laugh, stupid men. It's never my fault. The new is such a foreign concept, I may as well keep on lying. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. I want to thank Jimmy and Joan. We always talk about getting kids off the streets, but I really think there's something to be said for getting adults off the streets. So Jimmy and Joan, you know, thank you for keeping me off the streets on Tuesday nights, because it's been a really, really tough summer, and I probably would have been doing something really bad, like, I don't know, throwing poems at people. Here's an oldie but goodie. This is called Ironic. And by the way, if you're watching this on television, the reason why we keep looking back and forth like this, like we're at a tennis match, is that this room is divided. It's a really, really strange thing where there's nothing in front of you. And it kind of divides your consciousness. So I'm sitting here trying to decide, you know, where do I look? Am I probiotic? Am I antibiotic? You know, how do I feel? Ironic. I'd like to have dinner with my father. Share a bottle of wine now that I'm legal. Tell him that Miles Davis died and that I fell in love, finally, with the right girl. We'd catch up on everything since the bicentennial. He wouldn't believe that the Steelers became the Pirates, that the Republicans became the Democrats, that Porsche makes an automatic faster than its stick. No, he'd have a good laugh, especially about my glasses, about the cost of a house, this bottle of wine, or Christ, that you can see pussy anytime you want on these things that look like skinny TVs. But most of all, I'd say, how funny is it that now I get to tell you to respect your elders? Thanks.